Today on the AV podcast. Okay. Well, all right. Well, all right now. Okay. Well, all right now. We got a game seven. We got a game seven now. Now. Okay. Before we dive into that, though, I'm joined by O'Neal Kamaka, the co-founder of the Skills Refinement Group, as we discuss the epic Game 6 of the Raptors-Celtics series. We break down Kyle's performance, Kyle Lowry's performance, our advice for Pascal Siakam, our predictions for Game 7, plus we extend the conversation on the Steve Nash-Brooklyn Nets pairing, where Giannis and the Bucks go from here, and more. Sasha Rive is available wherever you listen to your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, and Alexa, just for starters. Listen, rate, review, and subscribe to all of my shows. Hit the like button, the favorite button. Hit the five stars, like right now as we're listening. Like right now. You know, hold on a second. I'll wait for you to do it. I'll wait for you. Hold on. Go ahead. See? That wasn't so hard, right? And to make sure you check out my entire catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. It's the AV podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio. This podcast was recorded during my annual fantasy football draft. So shout out to all of the guys in the league. They know who they are. And they'll be proud, and I mean this sincerely, they'll be proud to let you know that I'm the reigning champion coming off possibly the greatest fantasy football season you can ever have in the history of fantasy. They'll be proud to tell you. I'm telling you right now, they'll be very proud to tell you. They've never been prouder. Just ask them. Especially the one that lives in New York. The one that lives in New York City. He's the most proud. He's the most proud. In fact, he's never been prouder. I can tell you that right now. He's never been prouder. And in the illustrious words of Rudy Tomjanovich, I'll let him tell it. I'll let him tell it.
Non-believers all along the way. I have one thing to say to those non-believers. Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
Welcome to the AV podcast with Cal C on South Shore Ave Radio.
Welcome to the AV podcast. My guest today is the co-founder of the Skills Refinement Group. He's been on the last few podcasts. I hope by now I've made up for it due to the Last Dance ones that I did before.
Not even close.
Please welcome O'Neal Kamaka to the show. How you doing today, sir?
Oh, I'm great. How you doing?
I'm doing good. So, the Raptors pulled it off?
They did pull it off. You know what? Listen, when you win a chip and you see what it takes to get there, you know, they're poised. They know they got to, you know, they know what they need to do. Never get too high, never get too low. And so, they made some shots when they need to make shots and they got it done.
So what were your thoughts overall on game six?
I thought, you know what? I mean, I know where the league is at, it's about making shots. But I think, you know, there's something to be said about just keeping the game simple. Like, you know, I tell players a lot of times, to me, basketball is a lot of things. I want to, you know, it's like, it's business, it's life, it's, you know, it's like boxing, right? You know, if you go inside, going inside is like going to the body, right? You know, you keep going inside, you know, eventually they collapse, and you get not an easy open three, which is like a knockout blows to the head. Mm-hmm. But the Raptors just keep going for those, you know, those long threes, unnecessary long threes, and it's like, go inside, you have the advantage inside, right? Like, run some plays, misdirection, dribble handoff, have Pascal surge or Gasol set screens, and then dive to the bucket. Right? Mm-hmm. Have them set screens on Lowry and Van Fleet. Force up the defense to make a decision. Do we switch? Do we not switch? And, you know, one of the two is going to be open. Like, you know, I would be running Van Fleet and Kyle off you know, off the big Siakam and Gasol or Ibaka, you know, do some, you know, simple down screens and, you know, just to get the bigs rolling to the basket, get some easy looks, man. It's you know, these long deep threes, sometimes it's like, dude, you don't really need to take that shot. Go inside. Keep it simple. Sometimes you just got to be patient. You got to wear the team down, going inside. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you go, then you look for the threes, right? So, but, I mean, they got it done. They did play defense. The shots weren't falling, but at least they kept up the defensive energy. And yeah. They did a good job of
And to lend to what you're saying, honestly, like the way the game is being played now, we all know that the three is the focus. You even if you have a great big man, it almost seems like you have to play outside in and not the other way around. Because I thought, you know, there was points where, well, first off, Serge Ibaka had a hell of a start offensively. He was playing really well, and it was interesting to see how they just kind of went away from him for like the fourth quarter and the two overtimes. Like he just sat the bench. I guess he just rolled with the lineup that he felt hot. He went with that gut instinct. But I mean, he came in, he was the one that was really consistently scoring inside, you know, which I thought was like valuable at least at those points. I mean, he played 21 minutes, but yeah, I thought he was really valuable in those moments.
Yeah, I would agree. But I also think that, you know, it was more defense than it was offense, right? And, you know, I think they felt that was a better lineup, small and quick defensively with Serge out of the game. Yeah. I think Nick was focusing more on defense than he was offense. But it paid off, right? So they got the win.
Well, I mean, first off, you know, we got to give a major shout-out to Kyle Lowry, first of all, because you know what? I'm so happy for him, to be honest with you, O'Neal, because you look at his situation 3-4 years ago, and situations like this, you could have seen the nerves written all over his face. But that experience from winning the championship last year, even the year before, even when they flamed out against Cleveland, he didn't play that badly. You know, like he seemed to still have his heart. You know, I know he got wrapped up in the whole. Just the whole thing of just everybody wrote them off with DeRozan and with Casey at the time, in terms of not coming through. But at least he didn't play badly. And then last year, I think he kind of really had a good playoffs overall for the most part. And you could see that difference now. Like when he pulled up and hit that last shot, that fadeaway on Kemba, like his reaction after he got off the floor, I was like, yeah, like this guy's he knows who he is right now, you know. He knows he can be dependent on it. And I loved that was like my favorite moment of the game, to be honest with you. Just watching his expression going to the bench. There was no like fist pumping, no like beating your chest, no yelling. He was just walking like, yeah, like this is what I do. You know? And the stats back it up tonight too. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think again, winning the championship last year, they realized what it takes, especially Kyle, the mental space that he needs to be in. The mental focus that he needs to have. So I think, you know, getting the chip last year and playing with somebody like Kawhi, who is always easy keel and, you know, never gets too high, never gets too low. I think it rubbed off on these guys. Mm-hmm. And especially Kyle so much, where Kyle just realized he doesn't have to press and, you know, he doesn't have to try and force it and he just relaxes and he goes up there and hoops. And so, yeah, man, I mean, you know, I'll say it again. I was one of those that was asking for a trade for Kyle Lowry, and not because I thought he sucked. He's one of my favorite Raptors, just because I thought, you know what, his trade value is very high. Maybe we can get some good stuff for him. But you know what, at this point, and I said this before, just keep him, man. I tweeted that he embodies what a basketball player is about. You know, like as a coach, you love somebody like Kyle Lowry, and I'll say it again. You know. This guy, he's a, you know, best friend of the Raptor, and when your best player is your hardest worker, the team's going to be successful. And he sets the tone, and he holds guys accountable, and then, you know, you're also with the other veterans like Gasol and Ibaka. So I'm a big Kyle Lowry fan. I don't want him to be traded anymore. I don't care. You know, let him finish off with the Raptors. He deserves it. He's earned it. And, you know, win or lose, this guy should just be a Raptor, and He's great. He reminds me of Doug Gilmore and Wendell Clark, just blue collar, go out there, work hard, and do it.
And you look at his story too. You know, you look at a situation where, you know, he always had to fight for everything. You know, he went to Villanova. He had to fight for that spot. You know, he got drafted, you know, in the first round. You know, he wasn't like a lottery pick or anything. When he got drafted, I think the next year when he went to Memphis, the year after that, they drafted Mike Conley, and he got traded to Houston. He bounced around. He came to Toronto. I mean, it wasn't a guarantee that his career was going to end up like this. And you look at the whole totality of his story, it's amazing to see where he is right now. As you said, there was many times he frustrated the living hell out of Raptors fans all over the world. And, you know, I think it's a perseverance of heart, like, which he's always had. He's always had heart. But I think he has a level of maturity about him now that he's not going to waver in situations, at least not too much anymore. If he shoots bad, he shoots bad. But he's always going to come with it on defense. He's always going to give you everything he has. He's always going to lead, whether a shot falls or not. And that's what you kind of want from your leader, you know?
Yep, totally agree.
And then tonight you're looking at the stats here: 33 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals. He had a block. He had a bunch of deflections. Just
in 53 minutes.
In 53 minutes, yep. And then you got Van Vliet, you know, another guy that's you know almost like a clone of him, you know, a less athletic clone of him. But you know, 21 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists. Same thing. Just what I love about, you know, you look at somebody like Tatum stats tonight. Like Tatum stats, you're just reading the box score. You're thinking, man, this kid had a hell of a game, 29, 14, 9. But when you look at the whole game, this is why they say stats don't tell the whole story. He had to work for everything he had tonight, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think the way they're playing him defensively, especially with the smaller backcourt, like they're really getting into him. Even though his handles are tight, and even though he has the moves and the boogie to go with with the shake, like. So every time he puts the ball on the floor, he has to work for everything because Kyle and Van Vliet are snipping at his handles at every take, messing with his footwork. By the time he goes to shoot his shot, he's not even set sometimes, you know, and that's all you can ask for.
Yep, I totally agree.
So if I could ask you, if there's anything you could say to Pascal Siakam at this point, what advice would you give him? Would you give him a Bible scripture? Holy water? What would you give him at this point?
I'll give him, I mean, it's too late right now to fix his shot, but mm-hmm. I need this dude to stop. He's taking too many, he's working too hard to score, man. Just keep it simple. Try to score the 2-3 dribbles, you know, lash to the bucket, you know, cut, catch it, post up, work on, you know, staying within 10 feet to the rim, like. You know, get rhythm that way. Maybe get some fouls. Get to the free throw line. Maybe get it. You know, again, getting rhythm that way. That's what I would say to Pascal Siakam instead of just, you know, being a hope and pray shooter. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And you know, and then definitely work on a shot over the break and fix his mechanics. But if I'm making some watching tape with this dude, and like, listen, man, you got to operate close to the basket. You know, fuck the three, stay close to the rim, operate around there, and go from there.
Yeah, I think with him at this point, I mean, this guy is your star or one of your two or three stars at this point on your team. You rode with him all year. You can't ask him to now take 5 shots in the game. You're just going to completely break him. Like, you got to just ride with him and just hope he snaps out of it. But with that said, I mean, you know, to lend to what you were saying earlier in the conversation, the fact that everybody shoots threes and everybody looks for their outside shot first, I think game 7 especially, he has to go in reverse. Start honestly with just, even if it's just crashing the boards and just getting some garbage points, like he just has to start from inside out this time. He can't start from outside in like for game 7. He just can't do it. Like, just everything has to be in the paint. You know, if he goes 2-for-20 and he's missing shots in the paint, honestly, I'll live with it. I'll live with it at this point. But I think that's where it needs to go. But he's working too hard, and I think it's a representation of how the Raptors look throughout this whole series. I like, you know, we've talked offline about this, but you know, to me, when a team is working that hard to score baskets, man, it's not a good look. I mean, it's a miracle that they're here, that this game, you know, there's a game 7 Friday night, which everybody's going to be looking for, which is amazing. You know, as a basketball fan, second year in a row they're in a second round 7th game, but they got to find easier ways to score. You know, I thought they did a better job of it in the second half, but they just, throughout this series, Boston seems like they just, even today, Boston seems like they get their baskets easier, you know, and mm-hmm. that's, it's just not a good sign. Like, and honestly, when you really think about it, like, yeah, the Raptors won it all last year, but that second round against Philly, if you remember, they kind of went through the same thing. It's just that Kawhi kind of just, you know, that Kawhi blanket just covers all their mistakes. You know, like, so when they were struggling like this, he would go for 30, 35 and 14. And you know what I mean? And just, and we wouldn't even remember that guys struggled and couldn't score. They pretty much went through this too.
Yep.
You know, so which I find.
Totally agree. Yeah. Totally agree. So again, hopefully, you know, they've been through this, you know, and hopefully guys step up, you know, either this is where we need everybody on deck. Like, nobody hanging their head, wish, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda. Mm-hmm. Like, yo, they just leave it out there.
Yeah, Gasol woke up in the second half offensively, thank God, because mm-hmm. he needed him tonight. I mean, I'm happy that they won. I'm just, you're just happy that at this point, you're just like, look, man, you'll take it. It doesn't care how ugly it looks. You take it, man. It don't matter. We're not looking for style points here. You just take at the W any way you get it. Who cares?
A win's a win. Whether you win by one or you win by 50, a win's a win.
A win is a win. Counts as the same on the series scoreboard. So look into Game 7. What are your thoughts looking into Game 7, and what's your predictions? What do you think is going to happen in Game 7?
I mean, obviously, you want to, you know, pick the Raptors. You hope that they play the same way that they did today. You know, they bring that energy. They bring that fire that, you know, they just compete, man. You just leave it all up there, right? Mm-hmm. I know Boston's definitely going to be that. I know these guys are young. They're hungry. So, you know, expect that Kemba Walker's going to come out firing, Marcus Smart's coming out firing, Brown and Tatum coming out firing. So, yeah, she's just going to have to match that.
Yeah, and what's your prediction? What do you think? Who do you think is going to win? Do you think Toronto's going to win? Or, like, who do you think is going to win this?
Sure, I'll give it to the Raptors.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'll give it to the Raptors.
Okay.
Game 7.
Yeah, I think experience is going to ring through. I thought the Raptors was going to win in 7, so, I mean, I'm not. The way they got to Game 7, it kind of surprised me, but I'm not surprised that it came to this point, because I thought it was going to, you know, I've been saying from the beginning, Boston is a bad matchup for Toronto, and I thought Toronto mm-hmm. could pull it off. I didn't think Siakam offensively would be playing this bad. He's been solid defensively, but offensively, you know, it's the whole city's on his back right now, like, just, you know, looking at him.
I mean,
you
know, I don't blame them, right? Like,
yeah,
no, you know, everybody's sure. like, I remember being, you know, on Facebook, people are like, in one of the Facebook groups, you know, they're like, oh, Kawhi, who? Let's just, you know, forget Kawhi. You know, it's all about Siakam. I'm like, yo, relax. Mm-hmm. But because Siakam's shot, I don't trust, you have to be a shot maker in this league, right? The successful players have to have a jump shot.
Right.
Or have to have a shot, some kind of shot. And Siakam's shot is just too inconsistent. Like, I look at his mechanics, I'm like, I don't trust that. And sure enough, a lot of guys' confidence lies in their shot. Their shot is falling. They can do it. They feel that they're unstoppable. They can do anything, right?
Right.
And again, in this league, too, all you have to do is Boston. All you have to do is just crowd the key, right? Because Siakam ain't trying to, you know, Siakam's not scoring off 2-3 dribbles. He needs 4-6 dribbles, right, to get to the bucket. You allow defense to get set when you do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's not like it's a quick catch and shoot. It's not like he mixes it up, right? It's not like it's a quick catch and shoot one moment. You know, next moment, you know, one dribble, two dribble, step back. Like, he doesn't mix up his scoring.
Yeah.
Like, he's so predictable in what he's going to do, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's easy to lock in on him, right? And he doesn't have a gym. And he thinks he's going to shoot his way into it. It's like, dude, nah, man. You know, get the ball out of your hands. Then Fleet and Kyle handle the rock. And you get the ball coming off screens. You get the ball sitting down screens and slipping to the basket. Pick and roll, whatever you need to do, but you got to figure it out, man. Like, you're Jay, you can't be stubborn. You got to recognize, you know what? You're not a great shooter to begin with, so it's not one of those I'm going to just keep pulling. You know, it's not one of those Lou Dort's moments, but I'm just going to keep pulling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You just got to recognize what's happening and find different ways to score.
Yeah, and this is where, you know, again, where he's got to work from inside out. It can't be from outside in today. Like the way they started the game when he got fouled on the first play underneath the basket, that should be his diet for the whole first quarter. Like just get him easy baskets and let him live at the foul line, and then I think from there, the confidence grows. You know what I mean? When you look up and you have 8 or 9 points on the board after one. You know, 5 free throws taken, you know what I mean? Like 4 or 5 shots around the hoop, easy layups. Like that just breeds your confidence. And then from there, everything is all right. But I just think that's the biggest thing for him right now. Like they got to work on getting easier shots. I mean, we can work on the offseason later. He may have to move in Rico Hines into his house this offseason. But again, you can't even worry about that right now. All we're worrying about is Friday. How can he get better for Friday? And those are like the things you can do right now. Just get everything with him going to the basket.
That's it.
Quick moves. That's it. Like just that's the only thing that we, you know, a Raptors fan should care about. But I think they're gonna win Game 7. I think this is where the experience kicks in. But if they come with this same kind of effort that they came with today. Like if they come with this same kind of effort, I think they're going to win the game. But if they come out flat like they did in Game 5, just, you know, we're going to have to watch reruns on TV, figure out the Netflix, what's the Netflix movie of the night at that point. Before we wrap up, what are your thoughts on the other series? Your thoughts on Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks, which is like the semi surprise of this playoffs, because Only because they're the number one overall seed in the league. But, I mean, none of us are surprised, really, that Miami is the one that, you know, that made it past them, because they were the dark horse that we were all talking about. Even the earlier podcast, we were talking about that, too, that you're on. We were talking about Miami being a dark horse. So, but what are your thoughts on what happened with the Milwaukee Bucks before we go?
You know what? I wasn't surprised. Giannis has no joy. He's kind of like Pascal, where they need to massage the basketball before they score. Mm-hmm. And similar to Pascal, you know, I would have taken the ball out of Giannis's hand and again, have him coming off screens, have him play a two-man game with Middleton. Maybe have Drexler bring up the ball, put Middleton and Pascal in screening actions with Pascal sitting down screen for Middleton, back screen for Middleton, and then Giannis could slip and get the ball. And they back, you know, they make a play go to the bucket instead of always dribbling up. Everybody sees him coming. They love him the key and he can't do anything. Right? So those are ways out of the use to use Giannis. So, but I wasn't surprised because he doesn't have a shot. He doesn't have a shot. You can't, when you don't have a shot and you're supposed to be the best player and everybody wants to run through you, you know, it doesn't work. And so I was not surprised. I never had Milwaukee being in the finals. I think I had the Raptors and the Heat. Right, the Raptors. Yeah. When I looked at the matchup, I'm like, I got the Raptors in the Heat in the Eastern Conference for Finals. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the Bucks because I didn't trust Giannis. He doesn't have a shot. Middleton, you know, he finally stepped up in the last two games. And surprise, surprise, what is it? It's because his game is based on ball movement, quick decisions, whatever. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, I guess he's not good just standing there watching Giannis go to work and then he might get a touch. So, you know, they got work to do, man. They got to figure something out. You know, again, you know, they don't have to copy what everybody else is doing. It's like, you know, get him coming off the move, get him coming off, diving to the bucket, get him close to the bucket. You know, instead of having him dribble up and trying to penetrate, have him set screens and then slip, right? Because he's along, you know, if there's a switch, perfect. If there's no switch, his man's going to be late getting onto him. He'll press the ball closer to the basket. He'll make quick moves if double team's coming, right? It's easier for him to kick out to the shooter, so... You know, they're going to need to change some stuff up, especially, you know, how they're going to free up Giannis, to get in the bucket. So I wasn't surprised. I picked Miami as a dark horse because they're grimy.
Yeah.
And the way they play, and they got Jimmy buckets that's going to hit them, give them big buckets. And they got Tyler Hill, that's some coiners. He reminds me of Sam Cassell when he was rookie for the Rockets.
That is a good comparison. That is a good comparison.
And make some big shots and just like, you know, when Sam Cassell would be holding his hand on the, you know, like he was holding his big balls and mm-hmm. you know, crunching up the court. So that's who Tyler Herro reminds me of. And Mike Bibby. Guys like that who were, mm-hmm. you know, when Mike Bibby was in a big shot for Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
Like, guys like that, you know, I'm not afraid of the moment. So, yeah, man, Miami's tough. And so I wasn't surprised when the Bucks lost.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if there wasn't a pandemic, I mean, obviously the world would be better. This, we wouldn't even be talking about basketball right now because obviously the season would have been long over. But I mm-hmm. think if they would have met in the, you know, under normal circumstances, I think Milwaukee probably would have maybe pulled away with that one, even though it's a bad matchup and that remains the same. Just because of the pressures for the role players on the road as opposed to home, Milwaukee's been through it before. Some of the younger guys on Miami haven't so much been through that, even though guys like Tyler Herro ball and it doesn't matter what happens. But I think, like, you know, being on the road, that kind of changes things a little bit. But in this environment right now where it's like a neutral AAU-style pickup, highly level pickup game type of situation, the role players don't have those nerves anymore, man. You know, so, you know, you don't have 18,000 people screaming on you. You know, I keep saying this, but that's like, it's a factor. Like in this series, it's a factor. So guys like Tyler Herro, the percentage of him balling, whether there's a crowd or not, it's high. But with that mm-hmm. said, would take that crowd element out, that extra pressure out of it. Now it's just a high level basketball game. You know, that pressure is not the same. So that's why I'm like, I'm not totally stunned. As far as Milwaukee's concerned, I mean, I know people are coming down on Giannis, and he's the leader of the team, rightfully so. I think one of the things they're going to be remembered for, obviously, is starting the boycott. And I think that's going to be the lasting image they're going to walk away from all this, which is, mm-hmm. for in terms of history, that's what's way more important. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the actual basketball aspect of it now, like, yeah, there's some things Giannis has to strengthen up. I mean, look, this guy's entering his prime, so he still has some work to do, even though, like, I love him and he's amazing. You know, it sucks that he hurt his ankle when he was, like, he almost had, like, 20 points in the first quarter. He's a pretty much unstoppable guy for the most part. I mean, there's things he still has to fix, but I think some of the blame has to go on Budenholzer as well. Like, I don't think he takes too long to adjust to situations. And, this is another playoff series where he got out-coached. You know, last year he got out-coached by Nick Nurse. This year he got out-coached by Eric Spoelstra. You know, and I think Eric Spoelstra ran circles around him in this series. So, I mean, I know some of us are going Giannis. They're going to tinker with some things. We just found out Marvin Williams, he's called it a career. Actually, as of tonight, he retired. So, you know, they're going to have to, you know, pick up some extra pieces. But I think that's the biggest thing. They got to kind of figure that out. And then, I mean, the whole thing looming with Giannis being a free agent, that's like the cloud over the franchise, right? Like, it doesn't matter. I know he's a super loyal guy, but who knows what happens between now and next offseason, right? So this is where all the rumors start, and we'll see what goes from there. But the two teams that beat him back-to-back playoff series, ironically, are the two leading candidates for Giannis' services if he decides to leave Milwaukee. So it's going to be interesting.
Well, Giannis said he's not leaving. And, you know, again, Middleton, I don't think he's a top 10 guy. He's not a top 5. He's not a top 10. He's not even a top 20. I mean, now, granted, the Raptors, you know, they don't have guys that are, you know, in the top 20 either. But he definitely needs help. You know, Kawhi, I mean, Giannis definitely needs help. And especially the fact that he doesn't have a jump shot. Like, he's going to need, I think, Max Kellerman. I don't really agree with Max. I'm more of a Stephen A kind of guy. But Max Kellerman, I thought, was right. You know, it's not a Pippen Jordan. It's a Shaq Kobe. Like,
yeah.
Giannis is Shaq and he's a Kobe. And I thought that Max hit that right on the head. You know, that's what Giannis needs. He needs a really good two guard that, you know, that's a bucket gonna get it. That's gonna go get it. I don't think that guy's Middleton. I think from Milwaukee, I'm looking to try to get somebody like Bradley Beal.
Yeah,
to come over.
While keeping Middleton, like Bradley, to be honest, of course.
Or maybe Chris Paul. I don't know, but you definitely need a guard that's gonna be a bucket getter and that's gonna, you know, help out Giannis.
And this is the one thing where I thought that, you know, them losing Brogdon was gonna bite them in the ass. I mean, I this was something I was saying from the beginning of the year, that I felt like, you know, even though Milwaukee was the number one team in the league, I felt like playoff-wise, I was interested to see how this was going to turn out without Brogdon, because I thought out of Brogdon and Bledsoe, I thought they should have got to find a way to get rid of Bledsoe. I thought Brogdon was the
hell yeah.
Like, I didn't understand why they kept Bledsoe. I didn't get it. I didn't understand why.
I don't understand it either. I think I have no idea. That one is I'm like, they traded. When I heard that they got rid of Brogdon, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You guys didn't re-sign Brogdon. I'm like, come on, man. That one's a head scratcher right there. I'm like, you guys got rid of Brogdon, and you guys kept Bledsoe. This guy can't. You have two guys that can't shoot. Giannis and Bledsoe. Oh, come on, man. You want to surround somebody like, with a player like Giannis, it ain't rocket science, man. You just understand with as many shooters as possible. Mm-hmm. So when they go to a collapse, boom, he's just picking them apart. That's what LeBron does, right? That's what LeBron does. LeBron surrounds himself with guys that can shoot. You have shooters around, you just catch and shoot, shooting practice. Bledsoe ain't one of those guys.
Not in the playoffs.
I learned the defense. I got the defense from my coach, which I'm sure he probably got from somebody in the NBA, but it's called X-Men. And what Houston Rockets are doing against Lou Dort, and what, Miami did against the Bucks, it's real simple. It's the opposite of boxing one. So where boxing one, you find one guy, you stay with them.
Mm-hmm.
In the X-Man, you pick up the guy that can't shoot, and you don't guard him at all.
Yeah,
you just stand in the tee, and you stay there to take a charge, you stay there to double team, just disrupt anything that's happening in the tee. And that's all they were doing with Bledsoe. They were just like, go ahead, shoot it, man. They're just like off of him in the tee, and, using it to, run double teams at Giannis, or just clog the keys, and Giannis didn't have any driving lanes, and then Bledsoe couldn't shoot. Right? So, it's, I don't know what they're doing. I guess these guys are being cheap with their money, and they want to pay Brogdon, but you got to think long term, man. Sometimes you got to spend money to make money and win, man.
Yeah.
It's like, these guys kept a guy that couldn't shoot. Giannis needs shooters around him.
They didn't want to pay the luxury tax. That was basically what it was. They didn't want to pay the luxury tax, and I think
it's like multiple owners of the Bucks, and they're all billionaires. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, you built a new arena. You built the whole community around the Pfizer Forum. From restaurants, condos. It's a happening space in Milwaukee. When Milwaukee's not like a metropolitan type city like Toronto or New York or anything like that. So. You spent the money to do all that, so you may as well put money into the team to keep them great, so that you can continue to profit from that community that you built around the arena, right? So, they just didn't want to pay the luxury tax, but I thought, like, it's amazing to see that how basketball or sports and life in general is so mental, because you look at Bledsoe and even that last game, it's like simple little things. You're like, oh my gosh, like how every year you're gonna have alligator arms, like every single year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just find that amazing. I think at this point his biggest thing is more than just a training. I think he needs to see a sports psychiatrist. So if he's gonna still be in this spot next year, like, he's got to figure out what's the mental obstacles that's in his mind that's stopping him from from having good performances in the playoffs, because it's major. That's gonna, at some point, the money's going to stop coming in the same, when you can't depend on him. He's going to, like, by the time this contract's over, if this continues, he's just going to go back to being like a bench player.
I find
it crazy. Before we go as well, I know we're going to wrap up right now. I know you wanted to say one or two things about the Nash hiring. So I'll let you say your piece before we wrap up, if you want to get into that. If not, then we can wrap up right now. But if you want to get,
I was conflicted, because obviously, it's Steve Nash, Kid Canada,
mm-hmm.
and I was fortunate. I never got to actually play with him on the team. I was at one of the tryouts, and we were on the same team doing a scrimmage in the tryouts, and I actually before that I had played against him in '93 in the Canada Games, and Steve Nash, right? And
yeah.
Part of it, as a Canadian, you're very happy for him, and everybody knows who Steve Nash is as a basketball player and as a person. And then the other part was, you had these coaches that were available and that were or have the qualifications to be the coach. I agree with Stephen A. in the sense that there's no coach that comes out right away and gets what Nash gets with guys like Kyrie and Katie.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't care what anybody says. You know, people are, you know, people like, well, you know, Kyrie this and I don't know about kids. I'm like, you guys are, the fact that you guys say that shows you don't know anything about basketball. These two guys are killers. These are the kind of guys that you need on your team, because when playoff time comes around and you need buckets, Kyrie and KD get you buckets and wins you games. Mm-hmm. And they already have a good, solid group around them, role player guys. So at the end of the day, you know, Steve Nash inherited a championship caliber team. Just with those two guys making him a championship caliber team. That's it. There's no argument. I don't want to hear anybody about Kyrie this and Kyrie that. And what's great about it is, you know, there's no real alphas on that team that's going to overshadow Kyrie. Because Kyrie's not really an alpha. He wants to be, but he's not really an alpha. And KD is a very accommodating player, right? KD is very accommodating.
Yeah.
And Kyrie's going to be able to try and flex. And KD's also going to be able to be there as well to help lead the team. So I really think they're going to do very well with KD and Kyrie. And I agree with Stephen A. when he said, you know, most coaches don't get that kind of team coming out. Usually they get, you know, a New York Knicks, right? Mm-hmm. You know, a lottery. Usually they get a team that finished, never made the playoffs, finished in the bottom of the league. And that's usually what first, you know, guys who've never coached before. So, but at the end of the day, you know what? I'm happy for Steve. I think he's going to do a great job. You know, he understands the game. And I think what people understand is, even though you've never coached, you're still managing the game, because you still got to do situations. You still got to be time and score, right? And I remember when I was thinking about coaching and getting into coaching, you know, I think the biggest thing that it wasn't the X's and O's. It wasn't the X's and O's of the game, yeah. Right? It was, you know, the biggest thing about coaching is managing the players and your relationship with the players, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's why I think Steve Nash will be successful, because it's not really the X's and O's. You know the game. When you've been around the game as long as he has in your point guard, you know how this game flows and the intricacies of the game and the ins and outs and the little things. And so I guess the major thing that he needs to focus on will be that relationship, and he's already had that with KD when they're in Golden State together. And, you know, he's known Kyrie for a little bit, and he's worked out with Kyrie, so you know, once you have your two superstars on board, then technically everything else falls into place. Yeah. They're the ones that, you know, that the team's going to follow those guys. So, you know, for me, you know, initially I was conflicted, but I'm like, you know what? At the end of the day, it's a great hire. You know, I'm happy for Steve, and, you know, I look forward to seeing what he does with the Brooklyn team.
Yeah, I kind of echoed the same sentiments in the last podcast. I'm like 50-50 with it. Like, I'm happy for Nash, for real. And like, this was no... I mean, Nash didn't hire himself, right? So mm-hmm. I can't blame him for the hire. You know what I mean? Like, and then mm-hmm. you got to remember, too, that him and Sean Marks have a relationship that goes back to the Phoenix days, too, right? So, mm-hmm. And once he let him know that he's interested in that position, being that he's had that relationship, it goes that way, too. But at the same time, it's like I mentioned before, when you see, you know, like especially in this climate that we're living in, you look at like some of these coaches that's been tirelessly working through these situations. I mean, look, you have a situation where Nate McMillan gets let go after 3 years or 4 years being on the team. And every time he entered the playoffs, it was a unique situation that kind of handcuffed him. Like this year was Sabonis didn't play the whole restart. You think that would have helped them against Miami? I'm pretty sure it would have. Mm-hmm. You know, last year they lost Oladipo. You think that would have helped? I'm pretty sure it would have. The year before mm-hmm. he overachieved, and Oladipo had the year of his life. You know, he was like a second team All NBA player, and they pushed Cleveland, I think, to seven games if memory serves me correct. But mm-hmm. so it's like a situation like that. This guy gets let go. Somebody like a Nash, who, again, like he's never coached before, gets a position where it's not Charlotte. It's not, you know, it's not Minnesota. You know what I mean? It's not even Philly. It's like Durant and KD, you know, like mm-hmm. that's, I mean, people can say what they want. Yeah, they finished seventh and whatever else. But I mean, we all know between the two of them, those guys miss 142 games. That makes a huge difference. You know, mm-hmm. a healthy KD and a healthy Kyrie, plus all of the role players who, like, I mean, they basically missed half the team in their restart. You know, from Spencer Dinwiddie to Taurean Prince, whatever's left of DeAndre Jordan. Like, they had at least 5 or 6 guys that did not go to Orlando. You know, so that, mm-hmm. I mean, you add all those guys back. I mean, they're going to probably have to move a couple of those guys, but you add all those guys back, it's a huge difference. It's a huge difference.
Yep.
You know, so anybody would want to get that role to coach those guys, because basically you coach them right, you're winning a title, or you're coming mm-hmm. very close to it. You know, so it's I still feel conflicted about it. Like, and I get why people still think it's messed up. I know Byron Scott had his comments the last couple of days about, you know, like a black coach not really getting those kind of opportunities. You know, they don't get to fail up to success. And then mm-hmm. and then you had Steve Nash came out and said today in his press conference that, yeah, like, I did skip the line, you know, like mm-hmm. at least he was honest about it. I respect him for it,
of course,
you know, because it is what it is, you know. But it's like, I don't know how, like, you just shove that aside and say, you know, it's nothing, Jason Kidd did it before, all these guys did it before, but all those guys didn't get a chance to coach what was potentially a championship contender for somebody who never had a chance to coach before, you know. Like,
I totally agree.
So it's a huge difference. That I think that's what the call, like I said, if he went to go coach for Jordan or coach whoever, to coach the Knicks, whatever it is, it's like, okay, yeah, take the shot, you know, good try, let's see what happens, you know. But like, yo, that's crazy. It's crazy to see. I think it's crazy to see. It's gonna be interesting, because, like I said, in a lot of ways, I'm like you. I think it's a smart hire when you're talking about managing personalities, you know, and let's see where that leads for, you know, some possible assistance or for Team Canada, you know, some, you know, like, let's see what happens for that as well. If he brings anybody up from north of the border to be a part of this process, you know, whether it's on the bench mm-hmm. or in the front office, let's see what happens with that as well. You know, that'll be interesting to see.
Well, too. I mean, I don't think it'd be front office. I think it would be on the bench.
Right.
It'd be interesting to see.
Right.
Because I know you have guys like, you know, you have a couple of guys, you have Chiano over in
right. Was he in Portland last, I think? Or?
Huh?
Where was he last? Was he in Portland? I can't remember where he is at.
No, Chiano is the assistant coach with the Bobcats.
With the Hornets, you mean?
The Hornets, sorry.
Yes, Hornets. With the Hornets, so, right.
You know, I wouldn't, you know, I'm sure, you know, he might be asking him. Maybe not. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Maybe he'll just pick a staff of a lot of veteran NBA. Well, Coach Fan will be veteran, but pick a staff of a lot of, usually that's what they do, right? When you have a coach that's new, they want to pair him with a lot of veteran NBA coaches. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, brother.
We'll see.
All right, brother. All right, man. I'm going to let you run, but thank you for hopping on this podcast as always. And if this series goes past Game 7, feel free to come on again to share your thoughts about these Raptors post-game playoff series.
Sounds good. Appreciate right. having me on.
No problem. Thank you all for tuning in to the latest episode of the Av Podcast. And shout out to O'Neal Kamaka for coming on the Av to discuss Game 6 of the Raptors-Celtics series, which is going to end up going down in Raptors history. Now, Game 7 are the two most important words that's uttered in sports. So I'm hoping the next episode, especially for all the Raptors fans out there, hopefully it's going to be a celebration of not just that game, not the game, but to discuss the conference finals. It's going to be a good one because, you know, even though Toronto has the experience of completing the journey of and holding the Larry O'Brien, the Larry O'B, some of those guys on Boston, namely Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, and Marcus Smart, as well as Brad Stevens, they've all been through some playoff wars themselves. They've also played in the Game 7 for the rights to the East, sorry, the rights to the finals, not the Eastern Conference Finals, but the rights to the finals. Even though they lost, they've been there before, so they got something to, you know, in the reserves to dip into as well. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the chips fall. So as a basketball fan, listen, man, Friday night, I can't wait. Thank you as always for the support. Consider to listen, rate, review, and subscribe to all of the shows from South Shirav Radio. And to check out my entire catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. For Neil Kamaka, this is Cal C. And you just tuned in to the Av Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. All right, until the weekend, folks. Peace. We out. Game 7. Okay.